How, realistically, could ExxonMobil acquire direct ownership of Russia's oil and gas reserves? The sell-off of Soviet assets during the 1990s had given birth to a new generation of private sector Russian businessmen, entrepreneurs, bankers, former security and intelligence officers, former apparatchiks, and opportunists of all stripes. Oil and gas plays were big draws. The dollars involved were enormous, and just 1% point as a commission on a deal or as a discount on a contract to sell oil abroad could make a man wealthy very fast. These Russian oilmen were not generally ideologues who shared George W. Bush's vision of a new order in global oil, in which Russia would participate on free market contract terms of the sort promoted by the International Monetary Fund. But they did see opportunity in the eagerness of Lee Raymond and his counterpart at BP, John Brown, to own a piece of Russian reserves. By 2002, one of these tycoons, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, was in a mood to deal. Khodorkovsky was just 39 years old when he opened discussions with ExxonMobil in 2002. The fortune he controlled was estimated to be about $8 billion. In the fashion of the day, he kept his short hair combed forward in a style suggestive of ancient Rome. He was a handsome man with brown eyes and youthful energy. It required boldness to seize and build a great fortune from the ruins of the Soviet economy. In that respect, Khodorkovsky was like a dozen other Russian billionaires who had emerged from the 1990s. He was more politically ambitious than some of his peers, and as ruthless in business as any of them. But more recently, he had begun to profess a newfound appreciation for shareholder rights and even international market ideals. He had grown up in Moscow, served as a communist youth leader, and had graduated from a technical institute in the mid-1980s, just as Mikhail Gorbachev consolidated power and introduced reforms. He and his college friends worked with computers, symbols of modernization, and they joined one of the experimental cooperatives permitted under Gorbachev's new economic policy. When Gorbachev allowed private banking for the first time in 1987, Khodorkovsky and his partners, then in their mid-20s, formed a bank called Menatep. They accumulated rubles as communism collapsed. Radical reformers around Boris Yeltsin issued 150 million vouchers with which Russians could supposedly buy shares in former Soviet assets. Many people dumped the vouchers. Menatep bought them up. By 1995, Yeltsin's administration was running out of money, in part because bankers like Khodorkovsky were not paying their taxes. Menatep helped to mastermind a loans for shares scheme with Yeltsin. In exchange for keeping the Russian government solvent and assuring Yeltsin's re-election, Khodorkovsky and his partners paid rock-bottom prices for state oil and gas properties. They spent about $300 million for a recently assembled energy corporation called Yukos, whose underlying oil and gas reserves were worth about $5 billion. Khodorkovsky was not only opportunistic, he was brutal. A few years later, during the Russian currency and banking crisis of 1998, he shifted assets around to protect his fortune while leaving depositors and investors, including some of the world's most respected investment banks, with large losses. As Russia's economy recovered in 1999, Khodorkovsky adopted a new strategy. All of the billionaires who had made their fortunes as he had claimed legitimacy, but they remained vulnerable politically, in part because many Russians justifiably believed they had stolen their wealth. Vladimir Putin spoke about advancing free market reforms and fashioning a deeper democracy as he won the presidency in late 1999, and he accommodated the business oligarchs, as they were known, in exchange for their agreement to keep out of politics. Yet Putin also transparently represented a reviving elite of former KGB officers, military officers, and Soviet-era bureaucrats who might seek to challenge the private sector billionaires for power and the control of state wealth. According to Vladimir Milov, who was deputy energy minister early in Putin's administration, Khodorkovsky's conflicts with Putin dated to the 1990s wild scrambles for state assets.
By the time Putin became president, the relations between his group and the Menatep group really had been tense.
They had struggled over oil privatization deals during the 1990s, and had evolved into rival camps influenced by former KGB officers maneuvering for profits and power.
Yukos was the company which was, I believe, the most infiltrated by former KGB officers out of all Russian business structures, Milov said.
That was a difficult matter to quantify, but from the time Putin became president, his own group of former security men saw an absolutely real challenge from Minatep rivals. Khodorkovsky sought to protect himself after 1999 in part by transforming Yukos from an opaque amalgamation of dubiously acquired property into a transparent multinational corporation that adhered to international accounting standards. His full motivations and intentions were difficult to discern. He was a man in a hurry with a record of questionable business dealings that spoke amply for itself. He seemed ambitious politically, and he increasingly flew to London and Washington and Paris, where he delivered speeches, built networks, and maneuvered for gain. He now positioned himself as the leading practitioner of normalized democratic capitalism in Russia. He moved to develop two highly ambitious projects simultaneously, a merger between Yukos and Sibneft, another post-Soviet oil giant, which would create one of Russia's largest oil companies, and a sale of part of Yukos to a Western oil corporation. That would diversify Khodorkovsky's political risk by aligning Yukos with the interests of America or Britain or France, depending on whether it was ExxonMobil or BP or Total that invested in Yukos.
He probably rushed too early for this, recalled Milov. I think he also realized, because of his personal conflict with Putin, he was maybe running short of time.
A deal involving a Western buyer would also allow Khodorkovsky and his founding Minatep partners to take cash out of the business and legitimately move it abroad.